Hi, everyone. Welcome to Dishing with Digest. I'm Stephanie Sloan, editorial director, here with Mara Levinsky, senior editor.
Hello, everyone.
Mara, last week we previewed John and Marlena's wedding on Days, which is playing out on screen right now. So Sammy was their wedding crasher and returned to town in the middle of the ceremony. We will be talking to Allison Sweeney today. But first, should it really have come off as a surprise that a Days wedding, or really any soap wedding, didn't go off without a hitch?
Well, I think that's part of the fun of looking forward to a big soap wedding. It's the anticipation of what is going to go wrong, because you kind of know something will. Of course, one of the most iconic interruptions was Scotty catching the bouquet at Luke and Laura's wedding in 1981. I mean, I suppose he was more of a wedding crasher because it was post-I-dos. But who could forget that? Who could forget Carrie slapping Sammy on Days? That was another great one. For me, the most memorable one in recent memory is like the soapiest scenario I could possibly think of. And that's when on General Hospital, Patrick saw Robin back from the dead moments after marrying Sabrina. On paper, it's so melodramatic and hokey, but darn it, if I did not cry my eyes out when Emma first saw Robin and cried out mommy and ran into Robin's arms in the slow-mo that echoed Robin and Anna's reunion when Robin had been kidnapped decades earlier. I mean, it got me.
Oh, I remember. I will actually never forget Bo kidnapping Hope on her wedding day to Larry and taking her away on his motorcycle. I mean, a fun fact, Peter Reckle told me he was pulled over on that bike at some point in Los Angeles and did not have his license to prove who he was.
That's
because he was
amazing.
Filming as Bo.
That's so funny. Yeah, Days got a lot of mileage out of the kidnapping brides from weddings there for a minute. I remember Jack kidnapping Jennifer on a fire truck to stop her from marrying Emilio. That was another favorite of mine.
And, you know, there were some other surprises with John and Marlena's wedding, namely the return of Susan and Kristen, mm-hmm. played by Stacey Heiduk, who is known to soap fans as Y&R's Patty and Emily. I spoke to head writer Ron Carlovati. He told me that the show was hoping to get Eileen Davidson to reprise the role as she had done last year. But Eileen wasn't available because she was shooting at Y&R. Ron also told me that he had thought of Stacey last year when he first wrote the character back in case Eileen couldn't do it. So she's clearly been on his radar. And this was just as a viewer. He does not even know her. He's never met her. He was just going by what he had seen her do on Y&R. Mm-hmm. Now, I did see some pushback online about it before she even started airing because there are people who think Eileen is the only person who could play these parts. But I will say that every actor I've spoken to on Days has told me what an amazing job Stacey has done with them.
And I thought it was super classy, by the way, of Eileen Davidson to tweet such a positive, supportive message to Stacey. I mean, that's just a really nice thing from one actress to another. And in our new issue, we have an interview with Stacey, who was very candid about the fact that prior to getting the call from Days, she hadn't really been working. She was, in fact, driving an Uber. And she described herself as being in a depression over the state of her career. So for her, the timing couldn't have been better. And it's really remarkable, I think, that she was able to come in and just slay it and not be intimidated by Eileen's legacy. I think she's really earned her kudos.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, imagine how hard it is to come in as a recast for a major character. She came in as a recast for two, which, you know, presents its own challenges for any actor. So I would think that her Y&R experience probably really came into play. I mean, in general, recasting big popular characters is always a tricky proposition, but we have really seen some super successful ones over the years.
Yeah, you think about some of the most iconic characters on daytime television, and they actually are recasts. I'm thinking of Leslie Charlson as GH's Monica. She replaced Patsy Ron. Melody Thomas-Scott as Y&R's Nikki, who came in after Erica Hope. Days' Kayla, who was originally played by Catherine Mary Stewart before Mary Beth Evans came in, and Peter Bergman as Y&R's Jack, which was played for years by Terry Lester, who was very popular in his own right. On GH, of course, there were multiple successful Carly recasts, so it certainly can be done. But you and I have both spoken to executives who've been tempted to try to fill roles that feel like they're really missing from the canvas because a certain actor or actress has left. And these executives just don't know that there's anyone out there who can fill the shoes of a really popular predecessor. It is different from casting a new role where there's a blank slate.
You know, the interesting thing that Ron mentioned to me about Susan is that it helps with that character that she's already kind of in costume, you know, with her wig and the mm-hmm. teeth and the glasses. And, you know, I have to say, I do prefer a recast to look like their predecessor. I think it makes for an easier transition. You know, I will admit it was a little jarring when Marcy Miller took over for Kate Mancy as Abigail on Days, because by the time she left, Kate's hair was her natural brunette and she has dark eyes. And then Marcy came in all blonde and blue-eyed, which certainly made her look more like Missy Reeves' Jennifer. And another one of the Abigails, Ashley Benson. But whenever she came on the screen, it took me a moment to realize that it was actually Abigail.
Yeah, I totally get that. I mean, I think the most jarring recast I can recall is One Life to Live's Blair. The original Blair, Mia Korf, is of Japanese and European descent. And even though a little bit of time had passed, Cassie DePaiva comes in to play Blair. She's blonde, blue-eyed, southern drawl. You know, obviously it was a complete reinvention of the character. And the show did have some fun with that years down the line when Blair had a flashback of herself as Mia Korf and we saw her come out of it like, what the heck was that?
I remember that.
And another physically jarring recast for me, I have to say, was on General Hospital when Jonathan Jackson, the original Lucky, was succeeded by Jacob Young, who was followed by Greg Vaughn and then back to Jonathan Jackson. Like, they really kind of just went in a different direction each of those times.
Yeah, you cannot find like three more different looking guys.
Totally.
I would say on that note, one of the more successful recasts looks-wise was probably Robert Kelker Kelly for Peter Reckel as Days' Beau. Mm-hmm. I mean, don't get me wrong, Beau is an incredibly iconic character on Days, one that I could never even have imagined that they could have successfully recast. But, and also, in case you're not aware, Beau and Hope are the actual reason I started watching Days. So I really cared about these characters, but Robert really looked so much like Peter, and there was something about that that really softened the blow a bit.
Yeah, I think it does make it more seamless.
You know, also, he wasn't working with Christian Alfonso right off the bat. She was also off the show. He was working with Crystal Chappelle and Lisa Rinna. So you weren't really expected to jump back into the Beau and Hope romance right away. So I think that helped, too.
Agreed.
Now, one character on Days that I could never see them recast is our guest today, Allison Sweeney, who began playing Sammy in 1993. She is back visiting, so let's get her on the phone to talk about this latest Salem go-round. Hi, Allie.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Good. I'm good, too. It's Mara. How are ya?
Hi, Mara. What's up?
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It is the perfect time to be talking to you as Sammy has just made her return to Salem. now, no surprise here, Sammy did not come back to Salem quietly. So tell us about how your return came about.
Well, I was really, you know, as always, sort of thrilled and honored to have a call from Ken and Greg and to talk to Ron about ideas for Sammy coming back. And I think they messed around with a bunch of different iterations of it. And in the end, this is what Ron told me, you know, he thought was the best return. And it, you know, I mean, what can you say? Like, it's just so fun and it's so Sammy. And for me, you know, I love Sammy's sort of willingness to just commit wholeheartedly to whatever she's got going on. And so it was really, really fun for me to come back in this way. And what I also liked was that, you know, Ron obviously had done such homework into the history of all of these characters, and Sammy's history with John and Marlena runs so deep. So there's such a great, you know, irony and callback to my very beginnings of my career, or Sammy's, you know, growth in the show in terms of a John and Marlena wedding. So there's something really fun about that, too.
Now, a lot of fans were 100% expecting for Sammy to show up pregnant with Rafe's baby. Was that, you know, something you thought about?
I'm on Twitter, like, people are still thinking there's a chance it might happen.
Yeah, I've seen that she secretly had the baby and is leaving it somewhere with someone. I've seen that one.
Which, by the way, well, I mean, who am I to say? I don't know. Maybe.
She could have gone a little prematurely and just left
it. Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, the only thing I would say to that is, you know, I love that. I mean, I think there was a real probably discussion, you know, going on about whether or not she should be pregnant. I think probably when he wrote it, I mean, I'm not in Ron's mind. It must be very crowded in there. But I'm sure he thought about it. I mean, you know, there was definitely talk and consideration of that possibility, certainly from the moment he set that story up in the first place. So, you know, I mean, I think that's a traditional fantastic way to go for soaps. But I think in the end, what he went with and the crazy adventure Sammy goes through would definitely have been different. And, you know, given Sammy's sort of affinity for her kids and dedication to them, and you would have to play it all very differently, you know, with a baby Bjorn strapped to her belly.
Now, can I just say her hair was amazing when you came back. Is that a style you would consider adopting in real life?
Covered in leaves? Is that what you're... Yeah. It's a really complicated routine of, you know, literally a combination of wardrobe dust and dirt and then, like, as much gel as we could get away with, like, making it as greasy as possible. And then the finishing touch of leaves on top is, like, you know... the piece de resistance.
Quite a look. You hadn't sported that one before, so congratulations to them to finding something new.
Well, it's funny because when we were talking about it on the day, and Richard got into it, Bloor, our fabulous costume designer, because, of course, you know, the clothing is ripped a bit as well, and he and I was sort of just heartbroken because I really loved the blazer I was wearing, the little jacket, sort of Chanel-ish thing, and I was like, no, don't rip it, can't we just pretend it's ripped? Like, he was like, Allie, come on, who are you? But I was like, oh, it's so cute, and so we definitely got into it. And at one point when we were talking about, you know, makeup and how dirty am I and all that, on set, you know, we did check in with Ron, and I was like, I mean, I think, now I don't want to give anything away, but there was definitely a discussion about, like, how dirty, how messed up is she really? Is it that she just fell down outside the church, you know, outside the square, or is it, like, indicating some sort of lengthy endurance trauma scenario that she's been through? And obviously the answer is the former, or the latter, rather.
These are conversations only people working in soaps have.
Right. Hashtag how dirty is she?
Right. Right. It's so true. And it's something I miss. You know, you really do get to pursue sort of these outside the box ideas. And, you know, Richard and I over the years have had, like, the most crazy conversations about Sammy. Like, well, she didn't know she was going to shoot someone that day. So, like, you know, I mean.
So she wouldn't have worn a fabric with stretch.
Right. She didn't know she was going to be, like, climbing through a window or hiding under a fill in the blank. And so, you know, oftentimes we do sort of push the limit of, like, you know, dressing, even in this scenario, you know, like, it was a cute little outfit she was wearing, and then, you know, who knows what happened to her, like, trauma unfolds.
Now, it had been a year since you had last filmed there. In the meantime, you were doing movies of the week for Hallmark. What is it like to get back into the groove of filming multiple episodes a day and memorizing all that dialogue?
It is really stressful. It's like, it's hard and stressful, and especially because I, you know, used to do it all the time, I have a certain expectation of myself, and the bottom line is, it days, like, there's no time for you not to get it right. I mean, they're counting on you to do your part, and they, in terms of the schedule, really rely on each actor and crew member and everyone to pull their weight and, like, help us all move as fast as possible. And so I come in, you know, there's a wonderful likeness to new people whose eyes, when they first walk on the set, and their eyes are so wide, like, what's happening? Why? What's going on here? You know, but like, they just didn't expect it to go that way. But for those of us who have been on that, you know, what's that movie? It's like the train and Divergent. Like, it's just going, and you better, like, run and catch up and hang on. So for me, it's stressful. It definitely is a very different skill set, memorizing, you know, one scene at a time, it's more about, on the movies, it's more about, like, memorizing sort of those specifics of every single action that you took, because you have to do the same scene again 8, 10, 12 times from different angles, and you have to try to match your physicality. And there is, like, that is, you know, to a certain extent complicated, different from memorizing 70 pages of dialogue, which, when I have fun, you know, sharing war stories on the movie set about what we do in daytime. And half the time, people genuinely do not believe you. They're like, you must be exaggerating. And I'm like, I can show you a call sheet. I can tell you, you know.
I've got receipts.
It's hard for people to wrap their heads around.
Now, we were just talking, by the way, about Stacey Heiduk, and talk about someone coming in with a huge Herculean task and, you know, the show trusting her to get it right. What was your experience working with her as Susan and Kristen?
Yeah, she was great. And she, I mean, there's so many reasons that was an incredibly challenging thing to do. Not the least of which is how fabulous Eileen Davidson is and how much we all love her and what a unique turn she took with those roles and what, you know, those are big shoes to fill. And so first of all, there's that. And then Susan, who's just such a like unique character in any genre, never mind daytime, and trying to figure that out. And how does Stacey sort of tackle that and honor what Eileen had created, but still make it her own and something she could do? You know, I mean, like, boy, that was a huge obstacle. And then like her first day, I'm not kidding, she had monologue after monologue, like pages of dialogue that she just rattles off to the entire cast. Like, we're all there assembled for, I mean, it's literally like something out of the actor's nightmare, you know, that in front of the entire cast of people who've been doing this forever, you have to come in and recite monologues about storylines we were all in and that you have never even heard of until today, you know, until you got the script.
That's crazy.
And so it's a combination. It was so hard. And the amazing, you know, it's a great group of people to work with, not the least of which is for that moment after the first scene and the first big hurdle had been crossed and Stacey did such a great job, Deidre started like a round of applause for her and everyone on the set applauded her. And, you know, we all just took a moment to say, like, you're awesome. You're doing just fine. Like, we're all here to help you and support you. And, you know, she proceeded to do, you know, some wonderful work. But boy, that was a big, big task.
Oh, that's so cool. That's so nice that you all did that. I'm sure that made her feel good.
I hope so. I mean, in some ways that you have to support each other because it is so hard and it is a team sport, acting is, and soaps specifically. So, I hope she felt the support from us because she deserved it and, you know, she needed it and we all need each other.
Now, what does it feel like when you walk through the doors of the studio? Does it feel like you had been gone for a while or that you had just been there?
There's always something different when I come back. Like, for example, there was some construction. So there's been some construction. So they like changed the entry, the way the actors get in and out. So my first day back, I was parking in a different lot and I had never parked there before. So at the end of my first day after, like, I had survived all these scenes, I have not told anyone this story, but I had done all these scenes. I was exhausted. I felt like, oh my gosh, I survived my first day back. And I didn't know how to get out of the parking lot. And I was embarrassed because, I mean, I've worked there for 16 years old. And I'd just never been in that parking lot before. And that's not true. I had been in that parking lot back like 20 years ago when there was a different exit and it wasn't where I thought it was. And so I drove around for like 5 minutes trying to figure out how to get out. And I was like, I went back to the in gate and I like parked my car on what I thought might be a sensor, like hoping it would just open magically. Oh, that's so embarrassing.
I mean, I have a terrible sense of direction, but I actually did the same thing the first time I was in that lot as well. I had to call someone to show me where it was.
I was desperate. I almost called someone. Like, oh my gosh, I have to figure out what to do here. But it was anyway. So things like that, and they really throw me for a loop more than they would if it were a new job or a new place. You know, where sort of you just know going in, you're going to get lost or you don't know, you know, what to do. I feel so familiar and comfortable there. Things like that really sort of startle me. And, but then once I get there and come through the stage doors and get a dressing room, like I walk into the makeup room and in some ways the second day, so the first day there's all these hellos and, oh, it's been so long and how are, you know, whatever. And then day two, it feels as though no time has gone by and I've been working, you know, since I was 16 years old, it's the same.
So I take it from your answer that you don't get your old dressing room back. Is it weird to just be floating around after I'm sure you had like a pretty comfortable home away from home there?
I did have, you know, pretty sweet setup at one point that was, definitely a home away from home. And I also, my favorite part of my dressing room was that I had a television I had bought in 1993 when I first got the job. And it had a VCR thing on the top. For those of you who do not know, a VCR is what we used to use to record things with. And to the moment, I mean, like, I went through Y2K with that thing. And magically the numbers just kept going. Like, boy, that just happened. And so then, right, when I finally, like, left the show in whenever that year was, in the 2014, 2015, I was sort of sad. Like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do with this TV? And my husband was like, what are you talking about? It's a relic. Like, let it go. It's on its last legs. And I would, you know, record our scenes. So, like, I do miss that. I had these tapes, and I would record us filming the scenes, and I would do it on, like, super long play for those of you of this generation that know what I'm talking about. So, like, it was, you could record 6 or 9 hours on one tape, but there would sometimes be, like, sort of the ghost of previous scenes. You could see through it and, like, these weird lines and just all those old memories of great old tapes that we had of fun scenes we used to do. So things like that were hard. I had a little, like, you know, snack box for stuff and a sofa I really liked and whatever. But at the same time, like, now, that was back in the day when you were hanging out there all day and you maybe had, like, some scenes in the morning and some scenes later. And there was, like, it was just sort of a bigger commitment. And now, I don't know if other actors feel this way. Maybe it's just because I kind of come in and I feel like it's, you know, I come in and hit hard and then I'm out again. But I'm in so many scenes and you're doing these wardrobe changes and you have lines to learn that there's really not, like, a lot of a hangout time so much anymore. So I feel like, you know, I just hang out more. And anyway, I miss everybody. So I hang out more in the makeup room and talk to people or go find someone to run lines with. So it's sort of a different, it just feels a little different enough that I don't miss it too much.
Now, speaking of old memories, you had Farrah Fath and Kyle Lauder back on set when you were there, and obviously so many other familiar faces just from all your years on the show. What kinds of memories come flooding back to you when you return? Like, what stands out to you when you go back?
It was funny to see Farrah and Kyle, because you do sort of flash back to, I don't know, maybe more than the storylines or certain scenes. I remember, like, off-camera things. Kyle used to do this really funny shtick in the makeup room that would make us laugh all the time. He and Ari had this, like, really funny sort of stand, essentially the guys, especially the actors, have these, like, funny things. Brian DeTillo does this rap that I remember, you know, and he can, like, sort of riff off of anyone's name or something that just happened and be really funny. Or he does impressions of old, of crew members that have, you know, long since either passed away or, you know, retired. But we remember them from the 90s and the early aughts, and he just does these hilarious impressions of people, you know, that we've known a long time. And so, I don't know, and it's just fun. It's fun to share those stories. And I feel like I always, you know, because they're used to working with, so I can't remember what I remembered, but when we were first doing those wedding scenes with Dee and Drake, it reminded me of a scene from many, many years ago that we had done. And I brought it up, and it was funny because Dee and Drake both sort of knew exactly what I was talking about. But I don't think they're surrounded by people who have share those same memories as, you know, so it was fun to sort of walk down memory lane together.
That's awesome. Well, speaking of memory lane,
I didn't give you any good answer. I just was super vague.
No, all good. Well, yeah. Like, so for the past 25 years, like, can you come up with 25 years of memories that stand out?
Yeah, start doing it in chronological order.
since this is a podcast and you have more time, I'll be honest that the memory that came immediately to mind is one that I cannot share with the fans. And it is like one of my favorite memories of a behind the scenes moment. It's, I don't mean to tease and be mean, but like, I just can't tell it, but it was, you know, just one of those like moments in my life that I'll never forget.
Save it for the last book you ever write.
Right. Exactly.
Right. Exactly. My deathbed will be to tell that story.
And we'll be there with a microphone.
For the fans.
So, Allie, when I was touring colleges, I have the most distinct memory. I was in a lecture hall hearing all about Boston University's film and television program. And my eye was caught by a blonde girl sitting in the row behind me, and she looked really familiar, and I was trying to place her. And then it hit me, oh, it's Sammy. Like, oh, my gosh. So I want to know.
Is it possible we've known each other all these years, and you've never told me that story?
I think I have told you that story.
No, I didn't hear that story either. She just told it to me earlier.
I wasn't holding out on you, lady.
She held out on both of us. I never heard it.
Okay. For the podcast listeners, I want to say I believe I have told them both and their memory is being called into question. But I digress. So my question, though, is how seriously were you considering chucking your then like fairly new Salem career to go to college?
Yes, so I was seriously considering it. By the way, I took a red eye that night, and I have to tell you, it was everything inside of me to stay awake in that lecture hall. And if that is any taste of how I would have done in college, things were not going well for me. I was like dying. It was so warm in there. Because, I mean, that's the thing about East Coast, like, you people, you're like, oh, it's cold outside. We better crank up that heater when you get inside. I mean, boy. Anyway, it was an amazing university. I really considered going there. My dad and I were touring schools. The answer to your question is that my dad, brought all three of us kids up to expect, he expected us, we expected of ourselves to be going to some sort of further education. And so I had always just assumed, it like never occurred to me that I wouldn't go to college. I was studying and busting my butt and taking the SAT and like writing those damn essays to get into college, like you're going to go. And so we toured schools. I went to a couple, Boston U and Boston College. And then I went over to Northwestern, which is where my brother had gone. And so it was actually the Northwestern dean who pulled my dad aside. And also because Sarah Gilbert had been at, like, she graduated maybe a year before I did, and she was on Roseanne, of course, and she quit to go to college. And so that was, like, a big sort of, like, news item that, you know, stood out for me. And then my dad sort of, you know, really sort of impressing on me how important it was to have an education and that you can't rely on this, you know, willy-nilly actor's career. And so it was the dean at Northwestern who told my dad, listen, like, she has the job that kids come to school to try to, like, figure out how to get. She's already there. So, listen, like, please, please don't make her do this. Please let her stay. If she ever, you know, ends up getting fired or having to move on from that show, like, then you can reevaluate and go to try again and reapply, and her grades and her SAT scores last for however many years it was. Like, so, and it was amazing. I was so grateful to him, because in the end, obviously, that was what my dad needed to hear to really get on board for the idea of me staying at Days.
That could have gone a whole other way had he never intervened.
I know.
Yeah, totally. I feel
crazy?
Like the dean was clearly like a Days fan and just wasn't ready for a recast.
He was very invested in Sammy's future.
But obviously a Sammy fan. He was no Carrie Austin fan at the time.
That's right.
Been like, yeah.
That's right.
He would have been like, yeah, she should definitely, definitely go to school.
That's so funny. So obviously you need to have a chunk of availability in your schedule in order to come back and do an arc for the show. What is your work schedule like these days with all of the other projects that you have going on?
My schedule is kind of like fits and starts that I have, you know, periods of time where I'm prepping and building up for the next movie that I'm working on. And that is much more flexible. I can go to the gym and work out and take my kids to school and help them with homework and then schedule meetings and read scripts and whatnot in between times. And then, when I get ready to prep the movie, we prep the movie. And then when I'm shooting, it's 3 weeks of intense filming. And then you go back to sort of the opposite of setup, the wind down where you're doing post-production and you're having meetings and I'm screening movies. And it's frustrating in some ways because it's all very like I'm waiting for someone else to finish writing something or to turn in a cut of the movie. And then right when that happens, I kind of give myself the least amount of time, even if like I get the cut of the movie at midnight, I have to watch it and give them notes so that they can start working the next morning. So I kind of work odd hours in between times, and then the movies are sort of little bursts of intensity. Mm-hmm. But all that is to say, you know, as my own boss in some ways, I'm the producer of my projects. I get to decide when we shoot to a certain extent. And so I can carve out times or breaks in between times to go be a part of days when I get the offer, the opportunity.
Well, you do have an exciting new series for Hallmark Movies and Mysteries. Tell us about it.
I am super excited. I came up with the idea of doing a new mystery series for Hallmark, and I decided to take my real life obsession with true crime to another level. I thought it was a great opportunity to create a new character on the Hallmark Movies and Mysteries channel, and she is a podcaster. And here we are podcasting about a podcaster, which is sort of very...
very meta. Mm-hmm.
Totally. Oh my gosh. I love us. Okay. So she's... And if any of our listeners here have tried true crime podcasts, they are super... You know, there's a wide variety. There's some that are sort of more light and others that are kind of really serious and dark and some that are... you know, a journalist of some kind, sort of really taking a deep dive into one particular case and investigating it, which is what I ended up framing my character about. In that, on more than one occasion, I've been listening to one of these podcasters get themselves into some hot water, and really, like in some ways, you know, they're either interviewing whom we sort of secretly suspect is the real killer, and that's uncomfortable, and you're sitting there like staring at your, you know, ear pods or whatever, like, oh my god. You're talking to the person who really did it, and I think they probably don't want to be talking to you right now. and some, you know, danger. So I thought that was the perfect way to, you know, to fictionalize that scenario and create, you know, bring a bridge between people who are interested in true crime and cold cases and solving them to this mystery audience was a fun new look for Hallmark, and they agreed and they loved the idea. So we came up with this story and these characters. My character's name is Alex. She's sort of new to the podcasting scene and new to the idea of being an investigator or a detective. So she's very much, you know, the everyday person, the armchair detective who's like, right, you know, wants to figure it out and is sort of learning as she goes and podcasting along the way. And then she teams up with this, of course, handsome journalist from the local newspaper, and sparks fly and ink flies, and you know they have to
do
get
podcasts
to the bottom of it.
Also fly.
Dead podcasts are flying. Yeah, totally. Pods are casting willy nilly. Yeah.
Well, so it's called The Chronicle Mysteries. When can we see the first one?
We're putting together three initial movies. Maybe we're still working on how many there will be, but we're launching them all together at in the beginning of next year. So at the end of January, beginning of February is what we're looking at, and we're going to air them every weekend for a month and introduce you to this wonderful cast.
Now, tell us how you got into true crime. I mean, that's sort of not your everyday topic that people go searching.
I don't know, actually, what sort of was the first... I think Serial, maybe, would be the first real sort of foray into it for me. It's a Serial, if for those who don't know, is a kind of really well-known podcast about a case in Baltimore, Maryland, about a teenager who was convicted of murdering his ex-girlfriend. And this journalist was looking into the case all these years later and sort of uncovered and revealed some, one could argue, prosecutorial misconduct and lawyer trouble and lots of reasons why we might think that there's more that went on there that meets the eye regarding this kid's conviction, who is now a man, and he's been in jail this whole time. So this case had a lot of different elements to it that were fascinating to me. And this journalist who sort of went down the road of, you know, interviewing all these people and looking into the case file and reading all that. And I just am fascinated by the justice system and the legal details. And it was really a real an eye-opening experience for me. And I was hooked from then on to investigate more.
Now, your husband is a California Highway Patrolman. Does he get involved in your crime stories?
Yeah, you would think it's so funny. No, he is not. He literally has zero. That's not true. I mean, I suppose there are some cases, like, you know, as events occur and we're reading headlines about, like, the Golden State Killer was recently caught with DNA and, you know, what's it called? That, like, 23andMe or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, like, it's kind of there's some sort of real justice there about him getting caught through that. But, you know, so I think cases like that are interesting to him, but the deep dive I do, or the little details and the nuances and how many different cases I'm interested in, he is not, he spends all day talking to bad guys. I think he does not love hearing me, all my crazy conspiracy theories.
So Allie, I need to confront you about something. I'm not a jealous person by nature, but every year I get completely snagged by the green-eyed monster because you get to go to the Survivor finale. I need to know, this is a two-part question. How do you know Jeff Probst, and can you get me in?
So, Jeff and I met at a celebrity appearance on, fill in the blank here, Allie, what is it? It was Wheel of Fortune? Yes. Oh, my gosh. Okay, thank you. Stephanie knows my life better than I do. Wheel of Fortune.
I've been covering you for a long time.
Oh, yeah. You have the magazines, you're like flipping through the pages. Wheel of Fortune, and it was in New York, and we happened to be on the same flight home. And we got to talking, and he's such a cool guy, and now I know his wife, Lisa, and their two kids who happen to be the same age as my kids, and we're similar. And so we're kind of family friends now, and they're super cool family. We get along so well, and Jeff is awesome, and he knows. He's such a cool guy for so many reasons, but not the least of which is that he really embraces the Survivor world. So, Mara, like, what you'll love about this story is that if you want it, like, you know, if and when we make this happen and you meet Jeff, he will talk to you about all of the different seasons and what was your favorite and why did you root for Cochran to win? Like, that's so interesting to him. And he just totally gets it and totally loves it and is really, he's a fan of the Survivor, like the game of Survivor and the people who play it. And I love that about him.
As do I. And gauntlet has been thrown.
I like it.
Now, speaking of games, Allie, I think anyone who knows you knows that you are notoriously competitive. So we thought, in honor of Sammy's return for John and Marlena's wedding, we would test your Sammy wedding smarts.
Oh, you know, sometimes I hope that by the end of this, we do come to like a finite number of how many weddings. Cause I feel, though one could argue debates of like missed weddings, you know, we have to set a limit of at what point does it count as a real wedding? Anyway, so carry on. But yes, I love this. Let's go.
Well, the first question was going to be just that. It was going to be how many wedding days, including interrupted and ones that Sammy might not have made it all the way down the aisle, has she had?
Well, but so, like, do you count the day that she was supposed to marry Brandon, but like got stopped by everybody, you know, like that was a wedding day, but I don't
know
that
she even
made it.
You know, speak of conversations you only have if you work in soaps. These were decisions we had to make when we tried to do a definitive piece at one point on Sammy's wedding. So we are counting if it's a wedding day, she's put on a dress, whether it got interrupted or not, or whether the groom happened to die, we're counting it.
Okay. So I'm not 100% certain about this number, but I'm going to guess 14.
Oh, ding, ding, ding. That
amazing.
Is
amazing.
I'm so good at this. Oh, my God.
Okay. How many
At one point, I really did try to figure that out. Sorry, but I did try to figure it out, and I remember the number 14, and so I have said that interview, that number since then.
You
but
may
then
pat
I
yourself
myself,
on
oh
the
God,
back. Yeah, you nailed it.
Has there been another wedding since then? Like, what, you know, maybe it was, anyway, carry on. Yay, yay, me one.
Okay, 1 point for Allie. Which of her weddings ended with her actually being married? We're looking for a number here. How many full-fledged marriages came of all these weddings?
Okay, she actually, can we talk through
yeah,
my
talk
life?
It out.
Okay,
for sure.
Okay,
show us your work.
Okay, so she actually married Austin that time in Paris.
Yep.
She actually married Lucas. Did she marry Austin a second time? She actually married EJ one time and then divorced him and then married Lucas again. That's two. Wait, now I've lost count. One,
you're at
one
four.
To Austin,
you're at four.
One to Lucas. Okay, four. And then... and then she had divorced Lucas, and then she had to marry EJ again. But did they marry? Oh, I don't know. I'm nervous. And there was no other. And there was a marriage to Brandon that ended up getting annulled. So she did marry him. So that's five. Did she marry EJ again? And yeah, of course she married EJ. How could I forget? With the you know, there was some sort of fabulous dress. Okay, I'm gonna say six.
Okay, I will say, we also have six down here, but I feel that there might have been something off in the show your work part, because I don't think you mentioned Rafe.
Oh my God, so then that must be seven.
Okay, I might have to excuse myself and go on the interwebs here while stuff continues.
Okay, so who has been her most frequent groom?
Of the 14
guys.
Together.
Yeah.
Jeez, that's a. I wonder if that's EJ or Lucas. I'm gonna say Lucas.
Nope.
One wrong. EJ.
Go back a little further.
Austin. Because the French. Okay, so yeah, there were a lot of non-weddings to Austin.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, we got a total of four non-weddings.
Oh, you know what? And the Vegas was a non-wedding. Okay, yeah.
Okay, here's a fun cue for you, Allie. Carrie famously slapped Sammy at her interrupted wedding to Austin when the truth about Will's paternity came out. Who else slapped Sammy that day?
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Okay, it was the paternity about Will and, Lucas.
Alas, it was her dear mother, Marlena.
Oh my gosh, okay. Wow, how dare she?
The nerve. Well, you paid her back, didn't you?
Well, I guess I did, yeah.
Who was the groom at the wedding where Sammy wore a red dress?
Yeah. I wore a red dress?
At Christmas. It might have been a vow renewal.
Oh, Rafe. The one, yeah, the Rafe.
Nice. Yeah. Nicely
it was,
done.
I love that dress.
All right, why did Brandon dump Sammy at the altar?
Okay, but was it at the altar or was it the time that, because there was one where we got married, but then it was annulled?
I think it was the annulled one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. So that one was because somehow Lexi ruined that one. And I remember in particular that she had just given birth to a child. And here's, interesting. I feel like she and Brandon had an affair. Was that after, maybe, or something? But Lexi found out that Sammy had lied about oh, I feel like there's some sort of DNA something. But anyway, Lexi found out that Sammy had lied about something and told Brandon. And
yes.
Yes. Amazing.
Lexi revealed that Sammy had switched Theo's paternity test.
Theo.
That was when
Brandon's kid.
That's right. That's what the switch test
and
indicated.
She double crossed me.
She did.
That's right.
See, that's like
she
bonus points
Damara.
That
that's
you remember
she's
that.
On Damara.
Yeah, we're gonna give
you
a bonus
that's
point.
A great example of a story that, like, wait a second, Sammy's the villain in that story.
Oh goodness!
Those were the years when I would like look around, like, wait. Why is Lexi the one, like, happily having her baby and Sammy, like... Okay.
Just, there's no justice in Salem.
I know!
Okay, so we know that Abigail, famously, was her maid of honor at her 2014 wedding to EJ, but do you remember who EJ's best man was?
Oh, my God. Okay, well, Will was dead at that point, right?
No, he wasn't. No.
Or was he?
Or was he? Then yeah. It must have been Will.
Yes. Despite the fact that Will had shot EJ at another one of their weddings, EJ was like, please stand up for me at this one.
Yeah, well, you know, it's better to keep him in eyes, you know, in plain sight.
Right. Put him somewhere where he could see him. Good call. Okay.
And finally, at your own real-life wedding, you wore the shoes that Sammy had worn to which of her on-screen weddings?
Well, that one is easy. It was Franco's wedding, or Sammy's wedding to Franco, in which he died. And the reason I wore those shoes is because I had spent over a month in them between the pre-wedding and the shooting and then the post-wedding or the post-death arrest. And then time in jail, I literally wore those shoes for a month, and they were all broken in and nice and comfortable. So I thought, what a perfect pair of shoes to wear on the real day of my wedding. They're already, you know, quite nicely broken in.
Smart.
They were a little dirty, but...
And so a little bonus for the audience. It's your favorite question that you're ever asked. Who is the true love of Sammy's life?
Her children.
Oh, nice one.
Nicely played, Allie. And for the record, my quick internet reconnaissance, I got to 6 as well. So
you get
ding, 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 ding.
Another friend, Jason 47, to verify 6. I'm going to need him to...
to weigh in here?
Yeah.
Jason 47, if you're listening.
Let us know what the definitive answer is. Well, Allie, we could talk to you for the rest of the day, but we just want to thank you for joining us. And
thank you so much. I had so much fun. You guys are the best, and I super enjoy listening to your podcast. So it was really fun to be. Invited. Thank you.
Aw, thanks, Allie.
Well,
see you at the Survivor finale.
Yeah. Well, stony face. I'm sending you stony face.
I'm sending you one back.
All right. Talk soon. Right. Thanks for joining us.
Bye.
Of course. Bye.
Bye. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Allison Sweeney for being our guest. Be sure to pick up a new issue on sale now and come back next week for another podcast.